Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everybody, to The Psychologists Are In. I am Maggie Lawson.
And I'm her podcast partner in crime, Timothy Elmondson.
And this week we are talking about Season 5, Episode 5, Sean and Gus in Drag, Racing. The episode where Sean and Gus pretend to be street racers to infiltrate a gang whose member was recently murdered. And we are joined by one of our amazing stunt coordinators, Dan Shea. We tell a lot of fun stories. He even talks about some other crazy stunts he's done. It's very fun. This episode was amazing, and you are all going to love hearing from him. Please enjoy. Dan, I am telling you, in 8 years of working with you, am I crazy, Tim? I never noticed it.
But you guys never really looked at me either. That's another thing. So maybe that was a good thing. Like, I was there, and you didn't look through me. But you didn't really take a minute to talk, to look at the person.
Like, take it all in. We just ignored you.
Well, not ignored. It was cordial. The relationship was cordial and professional. We were respected co-workers, but you know.
Dan, I always loved our recurring okay, joke of every time we come up to Maggie, every time Dan would come up to me, he'd be like, "Hi, Dan Shea, stunt coordinator."
Yeah. No, we did that. We did that as well. It was always meeting for the first time.
Yeah, you guys did it back to me, but you did it to me because you had no idea who I was.
I know. Thank God you reminded
us. True.
Exactly. Well, that's the same as Corbin. In like season 5, he would be like, "Hey, big fella.
Oh no.
How are you?"
Oh no.
I'm kind of exaggerating slightly, but I want to do.
We do fan questions at the end of this, and I have to say I have a couple of fan questions for you that are my own. So if we don't cover them, so Dan, this is the drag racing episode. If you remember any of like the car chases or whatever, and the mechanic stuff. I mean, it was nuts. Like the drag racing was crazy. And then also the stunt part of our show was every episode. You know, it's a comedy and it's light and all those things, but like we had some crazy world we were going into. Somebody was murdered and it was always dangerous and there were always stunts.
Sorry, wait, somebody was what? Murdered every episode?
How did I miss that? How did I miss it? Yes.
Goodness.
Every episode, someone was
murdered.
Yeah. So, Dan Shea, I just want to ask you, quickly, and we'll get into the episode, but like, when and how did you become a stunt man?
Well,
because you're a master.
I started on a show called MacGyver before you guys were born, the original MacGyver.
And you're a MacGyver?
Richard Dean Anderson's stunt.
That's crazy.
Well, I was his on MacGyver. I started on a hockey episode as Richard Dean Anderson's stunt double, and then they brought me on the show as his stand-in, and then I became 1A stunt double, and then I sort of sucked up to people and kind of worked hard on stuff, and then I started working.
Well,
I'm going to shut up when I see your hand. When I see the palm of your hand come up in the screen, I'm going to stop talking.
No, I'm more just kind of like this is incredible. This is incredible, and I didn't know this.
Yeah, if you did that, we would never get the episode because Maggie talks a lot with her hand, so we would never get the episode completed if you stopped every time Maggie put her hand up.
Okay, good.
Okay, so MacGyver, and then you get stunt 1A, but like it's a dangerous job. So you're just like, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, that was kind of my thing. I played, hockey. That was my deal. We used to fight a lot and stuff. And so I started off wanting to be a famous movie star and be a screenwriter and do craft service. And then I realized that falling on my head was better suited to my talents. And then I started falling on my head without a helmet. And that's how I started doing stunts. So.
This is why we love you. All right.
And then I moved on. I did a show called Stargate SG-1. That was a 10 years. There was actually a 2-year overlap with Psych and Stargate SG-1. And I remember I was driving back and forth across that second narrows bridge from the Bridge Studios for Stargate and then the North Shore Studios for Psych. The Stargate people didn't know I was working on Psych because I was on a weekly there. I was getting paid every day and you're not supposed to go work on something else. But Psych was so much fun. and there weren't any stunts in the first couple seasons. But so I just kind of like now it's really easy because you're on Zoom, so you can have your AirPod in your ear and be on set with stuff blowing up, and then you can be doing a Zoom meeting for another show, which is why another reason why you guys should never hire me to be the stunt coordinator.
Yeah, are you actually on another Zoom for a show right now while you're
as we speak? Yeah,
I think the only person that could pull it off would be you.
Yeah, the only unprofessional scumbag like you would be the only guy who would be so greedy and so unprofessional and so selfish to actually attempt doing that.
No, I think you're going to make it work.
I'm really happy to know this start of your career, Dan, while you were strapping Maggie into the clock tower.
That was the scariest thing I've ever done. The thing was, it was Rodeo was directing that one, right?
Oh, I'm aware Rodeo was directing that. Okay. And Rodeo.
Because I'm thinking, why is she doing this? Like, why on earth? Why is she? And I just thought because it was Rodeo to talk you into it. And I'm thinking, this is like the weirdest thing I've ever done. And I got to ask you, did we had you in a harness and we picked you on top of being in the chair, I hope, correct? Because you weren't literally just sitting in that chair and balancing 15 stories off the ground, I hope.
There was not a harness. Tied and to I the chair. I think you're saying that just so that I tell that part of the story. So I have a funny thing with Rodriguez where I've always been like when I read it, you know, I was like, I remember thinking, wow, like even for a stunt person.
Oh, I know.
This is a very harrowing, like this is an intense stunt. And then I found out that I was doing it because they wanted to get the shot of the clock tower behind me or whatever. And look, it's Rodriguez, it's James. Like we, and it was such an important episode and a part of the trilogy and like whatever. So you want to show up and you want to like be brave and you want to say like, yes, I want to do this for you and get it. But I was dying. And Dan, it was like, do you remember there was that, I was like, there's going to be a mat, right? And you were like, yeah, there's a mat. Byron's going to be down there. Byron, who was James's stunt double forever, who we just love. Byron will be down there with the mat. And I'm thinking, great, you know, we'll shoot right above it. The mat's going to be right there. God forbid, you know,
2 feet under you.
It was like two stories.
I know. Oh my God.
And I was like, I just had to like, it was one of those moments that was like, I looked at you and I remember you saying to me, I must've said to you a million times. I was like, you know, you had worked it out already. And I think I actually had a different stunt person even do this to the point where I was like, oh my God. Like it was like Laura Lee, somebody wouldn't do it. And I was like, oh, so I think somebody else did it. And I was like, not she wouldn't do it. Meaning I thought in my head, oh, someone else is here because she was like, hell no, I'm not doing this one. And then, but I know that wasn't the case. She like was on another show or something. And then I got up there and I remember just like grabbing your arm and being like, Dan, we're good, right? And you were like, yeah, good.
Yeah, like, totally safe.
So I had you. No, I trusted you. Anyway, so that was a major one. I mean, but we had so many. I mean, we did it was a very stunt heavy show, I feel like, for being this light, you know, detective comedy we were.
It totally was. It was like the Dar Robinson shot. He was this stunt legend. He shot a movie with Burt Reynolds where he was the first guy to go to the skyscraper on a descender and they wanted to see his face as he descended. And he went bam as he was shooting his guns as he fell down.
Oh.
They needed to see your face, you know, looking down. Yeah. It had to be you.
Yeah.
Couldn't be anybody else but you. Yeah. And they should have made a song about that. But it was, that was one of the scariest things. And I was just thinking, why is she do that? Must be because of Rodriguez. But that was like the scariest thing any actor has ever done. And you get a lot of these people who are kind of stuntish, kind of handy, and others are not. But that was like the nuttiest thing like I've ever seen an actor do. And shame on you for doing that. You should have said, no, I'm not going to do this ever.
It was tough. And this is like the thing that I was like, is that allowed? But at the same time, you know, I know him and I know he had a vision for what this needed to be and he was right. So like I talked to him, like we'll talk about it now. And he's like, it really couldn't have been shot any other way. And I do know that. So it's okay. But holy hell, it was a, that was a big one. Do you remember any other, do any of the other stunts on the show, like really stand out to you as like, oh my God.
Well, there was one that wasn't supposed to be a stunt. There was like, they kind of blew up this warehouse and I phoned the guys and said, what's with this explosion tomorrow? I'm not even on the call sheet. Shouldn't like the stunt coordinator be there if there's like,
wait, explosion? What? You weren't on the call sheet for Earth, Wind, and
literally not on the call sheet to come in. And so, because then production said, well, it's not really an explosion per se. It's these little propane poppers going pop, 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 and no big deal. So I said, well, but if you want to come in, then come on in. So I came in and I went to the effects dude and I said, so what's the deal with this, explosion today? And he said, we're not really calling it an explosion. Mm-hmm. It's like a little thing. And I said, well, so what's happening with the windows? And they said, well, it's tempered glass. We're going to have the knockers and the glass is just going to drop straight down. There's nothing blowing anything towards the actors. Okay. The door is going to come off, but it's going to be tethered. We're going to have a rope on the door. So if it does happen to come off the hinges, then it'll be on a rope. So again, no big deal. And we're just going to have these little propane poppers, and we're going to have these little fire bars underneath the windows to simulate fire. And then a little bit of flame coming out the windows and doors. So I'm like, okay. So I went to you guys. I said, look, this thing's not that big of a deal. Like you guys are like 75 feet away behind the cop cars. And I said, when we count down 3, 2, 1 action, like don't flinch and duck too quick because it'll look kind of non-heroic because it's just going to be like this little beep. And so you guys kind of went, oh, okay. So then we counted it down and it was like 3, 2, 1. And then it was like, this huge explosion. So I'm not sure if you guys remember the explosion in Beirut, Lebanon about 4 years ago where that warehouse blew up. It was like almost like a nuclear cloud. It wasn't like a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
It was a bunch of, it was in my daughter's neighborhood. She lived in Beirut. It was just in fact, it leveled her place and it leveled the hotel they used to stay at. But she'd already moved to Cairo at that point. She was in Cairo, Egypt. But it was just a bunch of explosive stuff they left in a warehouse, and it was like 108 degrees. And after 10 years, it finally blew up. So all of a sudden, and then the windows, all the tempered shards were like little pieces of bullet were like flying out the window, like thousands of shards just going all over the place. And then the door, yes, they had a cable on the door, but the door shattered into 1,000 pieces. So the rope held on to one little piece of wood, but everything else was going like flying all over the place. And then the doorknob, they had a doorknob that just took off like a rocket and just flew past the camera that rolled to Tim's foot.
Oh.
And Tim tried to pick it up, but it was hot from the heat from the building. And all of a sudden it was like, they cut. And everyone's on the phone to their agents, get me the hell off the show. And then, you know, and Shay, the coordinator's fired. And I'm like, I wasn't even supposed to be here. And so then in the afternoon, it was the episode where the fire guy was setting stuff on fire. And we did a full burn of the fire guy. So we used Gaston, who was Dulé's stunt double.
Yeah.
And he had to have a safe word for him. If he got too hot, he was supposed to yell out something so we would know to put him out. And so the safe word was going to be gas. And so we put the gel on him, and then we put the fuel on him, and then we lit him up. And he just went, whoosh. It was like the towering inferno. So right away he's yelling, gas, gas, gas.
Oh my God.
So the effects guy, Billy Blacklung, who's the cigarette, had the cigarette ash was dropped all down the front of him. He thought he meant more fuel. So he put more fuel on him and he went up even higher in flames. And then instead of running around, then it was, you guys weren't here for this, but there's all this plastic stuff on the walls. And all of a sudden, the plastic went up in flame and started dive bombing everybody as they ran through the building.
This is
I'm exaggerating. Oh, this is my music part. And then but what happened was there was a Hell's Angels guy who owned the factory, and he wanted to burn it down and get the insurance money. So basically, we burned it down. So he got his money. He was happy. So he gave it to the producers for nothing. The producers were happy.
This is a show.
So
first.
Then they hired me back and they gave me a sidecar.
Oh my God, you're a mess. This is the craziest story I've ever heard. And I believe is like 70% true.
Maybe 35.
35. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's,
but you guys were long gone at that point. You guys had had enough of Dan Shay and stunts. You guys had had
it
on.
We were that day. I will say that day was very scary. We talked about it when we did Earth, Wind, and Fire, but we I didn't realize. I do remember, like, I don't remember seeing, like, I know you came that day, but I remember it being this, like, talk that it's, like, no big deal. And then it ended up being, I mean, when that doorknob went past Tim's head.
Oh, you remember the doorknob?
Yeah.
Dan.
Dude, oh my God. I think I have.
It was.
The doorknob put a dent in the fire truck that was behind us. I still remember the sound of it clanging.
And I
would think, Maggie, I think I have that. I think I have that doorknob all mangled in a crate somewhere in my office. I gotta look through my elements.
These are so crazy. But yes, we remember that day super, super, super well. But I also know that it was exactly what you said. Like, it was supposed to not be. I just didn't know you weren't. It's crazy that there would have been something like that going on and you not be there. Like, you're the person.
Well, not yet. Totally. But there was another story from 10 years earlier, again, downtown, where they blew out windows in skyscrapers for a full block.
What?
Like, literally, and that effects guy, like, he literally got fired. But it was literally, he was so big, he blew out windows and skyscrapers for a full block.
What?
So this should be, you guys should be the EPs for our next series about how things, it could be a show about action where no one knows what the hell they're doing. And every episode, the actors almost get killed. And they hate the coordinator. They hate the effects guy. But for some reason, they have to be there. Maybe they need the money, or maybe someone's got something on them, you know, something about their past they don't want to reveal. So we should work on that.
Dan Shea, we love you. And we always loved you and always felt safe with you. Honestly, I know you loved us. Like, obviously, anything can happen at any time, but we always felt safe in your hands. And you treated us like family. You treated us like your own. Like, you were never...
Sorry, Megha, have we done the formal introduction of who we're talking to? Ladies and gentlemen, we are presenting you with...
Let's go into the episode. But yeah, Tim.
Dan Shea, King of the Stunties, is who we're talking to. And Dan, we have a very important question that we ask every guest who's ever appeared on our show. That is... Dan Shea, King of the Stunties, are you ready to help my dear friend Maggie and I podcast the shit out of this episode?
Yes, I would love to.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, Maggie. You look fantastic, and I've missed you.
Thank you. I missed
you,
too.
Dan, you look lovely
as well. You look fantastic, too. You have a new haircut.
Thank
Tim has
you.
A new haircut. It looks fantastic. You're in a blue button-down.
And not just blue button-down, a short sleeve button-down. I'm actually showing the stick arms for everybody who... needs to watch on the, y'all got to get the Patreon to see these awful, horrible, white, skinny stick arm Amundsen's.
Stick arm Amundsen's.
Those pythons look pretty big, Tim.
Ooh,
I remember those guns.
Pythons.
I've always kind of, I don't want to say jealous, but I've always, you have the nice combination of size, symmetry, and vascularity, which we all strive for. And you had the big three.
Size, symmetry, vascularity.
Some people are vascular, but you had the big three.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I've never been told that before.
That's the funniest thing. Flowers aren't the only thing sprouting this spring. Now's the time to let your creativity bloom. With Pear Eyewear, you can switch up your style in a snap with affordable base frames and magnetic top frames starting at just $25. Can I tell you all something? This is a true story. So when I first saw the website, I was like, how does this work? These snap frames, they go on. How is this going to look? In my mind, I couldn't quite like picture it. So I was like, okay, we'll see. We'll see. They're so cute and so cool. And the way that the frames that you can kind of snap on so you can interchange these colors. I mean, they have all kinds of the interchangeable snap-ons for these frames. So you get your base frame, which if you guys are watching this podcast on the Patreon, you're going to see I'm wearing them today. I'm in love with them. So I'm wearing the base frames. And then I have like three other snap-ons that are different colors, but they have everything. They have like themes and designs. And it's really, really, really cool anyway. And I love how I can like be doing this podcast right now, but then also go out and change my glasses. Like I have like this little navy blue kind of snap-on. I have a burgundy snap-on. Anyway, everybody, I love them. I really love them. If you're just getting started, you can get multiple looks for less than $100, including your prescription. The virtual try-on, which is so cool, lets you experiment with every base frame from bold, like the bold Wanda cat eye, to the round vintage Soto. With frames designed for men, women, and kids, the whole family can customize their own looks. They're top frames to make everyone smile. Timeless classics, superheroes, sports teams, sparkle, and more. They're so cute. There are hundreds of magnetic top frame styles to choose from with new collections every month. you know, you can get the snap on sunglasses as well. So you like, this is a new thing for me because I'm having to wear glasses all the time now. And so sunglasses, that's always frustrating because when I switch to my sunglasses, which most of them are not prescription, I can't see anything. So that's not good. But I love with this, you can get a snap-on sunglass. It's just, I really love this brand. Like I went on, I did the virtual try-on. I've done the whole thing and it's so easy and it's great. So bring more color into your world this spring with Pair Eyewear. Go to paireyewear.com/pineapple for 15% off your first purchase. That's Pair, P-A-I-R, eyewear. .com/pineapple, 15% off.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay. Let's dive into this episode. Mags, we have the affirmation.
Dig in. Let's go.
Let's go. Episode 5 of season 5. 5. 5 and 5. Sean and Gus in drag racing. Written by Kel Cahoon and Tim Meltriger, directed by Mel Damsky, who we love. Okay, I didn't catch this at all. Pineapple sighting? Did you get it, Tim?
Never do.
Me neither. There is a wooden pineapple tray in Tommy's car garage. All right, cold open. It's 1990 and young Sean and young Gus are up to no good. And by no good, we mean Sean gets caught attempting to steal Henry's car. That's when we cut back to present day and watch as an expensive sports car gets hijacked by a masked thief. Lassiter and Juliet get the call on a late night drive together, and since Lassiter has been frustrated by his lack of progress breaking up a car theft ring, he decides to take lead on the case. Then an epic chase scene begins and the car thief they were chasing ends up being shot along the way. So now they have a, Tim?
Murder.
Thank you.
By the way, there's a pretty major psychic connection to this car chase scene. The first line, I think one of the first lines we have is O'Hara saying to Lassiter, slow down, which
yes.
The psychic connection part, the very real life connection to me is, if I had a nickel for every time Allison, my beautiful darling wife, told me to slow down while driving, I would be a gazillionaire. It was the longest running argument in our relationship was because I am a bit of a speed demon. I'm a very aggressive driver. Maggie, you've driven me with plenty of times back in the day. I relate to Allison.
I would say, I don't think we need to go that fast in the scene, Tim. I don't think we just act like we're going fast. We're actors, you know?
I'm talking about in real life.
You scared the crap out of me because we were trying to rehearse. We were trying to rehearse your driving at the studio a couple of times and you would just fly around the corner and we'd be like, Tim, like we were going to have a double for you to do the slide and the double's going to have an e-brake, going to lock up the back tires, take the weight off the back. And then whatever, when you go down left or down right, the rear end will come around and we'll kind of drift around the corner. We just need you to do the last little couple of feet and see your hands and face in the window. But every single time you would blast around the corner with all those parked cars, like all those executive producers in the
fancy cars. I don't remember this at all.
In the studio. You sure you did. We would tell you, Tim, please slow down.
We had a Crown Vic with a slam brake at one point, didn't we?
Yeah.
Like a brake pad that would lock up all the tires really hard so you get a little turn on it. But Max, when you and I would go off hiking and stuff, I'm sure that I terrified you on that marine drive, that really curvy marine drive off to Lighthouse Park.
I mean, look, I remember, but I'm the one who got the ticket. So I think we're similar this way, Tim.
Well, you know, I remember too, Maggie, I don't want to keep going off this episode, but it was the last season and we had Laura Lee Connery out for you. And she's like the best stunt driver in town. She was
the
best,
like
male or female at doing forward 180s. She would come in, lock up the brakes and do a full ert. And we did one up on top of Cypress Mountain and we did it with CGI. She didn't have to get too close to the edge, but she was like 15 feet away, but she just nailed it. And so we said to you, not condescendingly, but it's okay, Maggie. Laura Lee is going to do the driving down this alleyway now. You know, you can stand down if you don't want. But you were not indignant, but almost a little bit that you wanted to do this. I'm thinking, weirdly, why does she want to do a car gag? We're not even going to see her face. And why would she want to do that? And then I realized, and I heard, and you went down that alley like a madman. And then you kind of drifted around the corner. You didn't drift, but you went really fast around the corner. And then you came to a stop, almost to say like, well, see.
I'm surprised I allowed that, to be honest. Because first off, Laura Lee is also just the most kind human. Like, I love her so much. Anyway, I always felt so safe when she was around too. She was like such a good.
She was incredible. But that day, you did that driving down the alley. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, where did this come from? This was amazing. And it was almost like you're just kind of, and then you just sort of, you know, did that and walked away, you know.
That's so good. I love these stories. Okay, now we have a theft ring, a car theft ring we need to solve. Cue the theme song. Sean and Gus arrive at the crime scene and Sean takes mental notes of important details he'll need for later as per usual. Yes, Tim.
I do need to point out that O'Hara mercifully is back in a very nice blush Pepto drink top. It's almost tea rose pink, which is, I only know that color because it's a very light blush pink. It's Allison's favorite color, rose. So you're in a tea rose pink, tea super rose? Blush Pepto
like
pink.
Like tuberose?
She just calls it tea rose.
Love.
I don't know if, it,
love
if that's
this.
Real name.
Tea rose. That makes sense. So Pepto drink, everyone. Back at the station, Lassiter is investigating the murder. And Sean gets a vision and tells Lassiter that the shooter was in a second car that had an altered VIN number. Sean calls Gus the hilarious nickname Chocolate Einstein. And Sean and Lassie weirdly bond over the donkeys and war fun fact. That was very funny. And how could we forget Lassie humming his incredible chase scene music? Yes.
Show first, Lassiter, the reveal of Lassiter's personal danger music.
Oh, yeah. No, it was good. That's one of my favorite bits. Juliet tells everyone that the victim's name is Max Contreras, who has had dealings with an exotic car dealer named Logan Paget in the past. Sean and Gus are on the case with Henry's blessing as long as they stay under the radar while they snoop around the world of streetcar racing. Yeah, right. Lassiter is none too pleased with Sean and Gus's involvement on the case as he has been focused on cracking down on street racers for some time. Henry tells Sean that he has to report to Lassiter then, and we all know that doesn't happen. Lassiter and Juliet go to question Paget, I have to say it like that just because that's what he says, at his home, and he corrects them on how it's pronounced. Right, Paget. Paget tells them that he hasn't talked to Contreras in weeks, and he was the registered owner of the car that Max was driving.
As we're walking up to Paget's house, we realize Lassiter's a secret car guy. That he's going past, he's naming off all the vintage cars, and which a little secondary separation. I, in personal real life, have a vintage car.
Yes, you do.
So I know a little something about
it. I wrote, like, we didn't know this about Lassie.
I have a 63 Ford Falcon Sprint convertible, which is
it's
a pretty
very cool
bitchin' car.
Yeah, so that's the first time I wrote that down, that we've heard anything about Lassiter having a car thing.
So in the scene with the boys in the SBPD, when Sean is throwing popcorn at me, and there's a scene where you just see me about to go, like the lip quiver's there, and it's the fast cutaway so again, our amazing editors know my tell so well that they quickly cut out of the scene before I totally bust up and broke the scene. Paget is played by the great Angus McFadden. So my personal secondary separation with Angus is pretty big because at the time, so this was really famous for playing Robert the Bruce in Braveheart, which came out, I believe, in 95. And at that time, so mid-90s, Angus and I were rocking. Well, in Braveheart, I was basically rocking his look, like this goatee and sort of longish hair. So I've been called the poor man's Angus McFadden for a long time because we have very similar looks. So cut to 1997. I'm in Paris on my honeymoon with Allison. And we go to this restaurant. There's a big line. It's a fancy little restaurant. We get to cut the line. They pull us right up front, take us right in, get us to our table. Got the best table in the house. Have this lovely honeymoon meal. As we leave, I thank the maitre d' or the door person. I think it was the maitre d' who got us in. I said thanks to the table. She goes, "Oh yes, you were very good in Braveheart." So because they thought I was Angus McFadden, I got a great table in Paris on my honeymoon.
Oh my god! I
told Angus that story while we were interrogating him in one of the scenes. We just became pals after that. And do you remember Maggie, total side note, the whiskey label that my friend Scott or Greg Wise made me? the first squawk for the last drop.
Okay, never mind. Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay, so Greg is really good friends with Angus. So recently, Angus and I got back in touch. But there was a moment, I'll just jump to the end now. At the end of this day of working with Angus, I got a text from him at the Sutton, which simply said, "Fancy a jar," meaning let's go get a drink. So we immediately reply, "Hells yes." So we go to the corner is one of our other headquarters, psych family headquarters, and have a great cocktail with Angus, speaking pals with him. The corner suite.
I love that.
So
I love that story.
And then on the socials, I think Devin's going to put on the photos I sent her of my look at the time where I had this headshot. So again, this was mid-90s, and I had this headshot, was like this magic headshot that opened so many doors for me. It was my first headshot, and it was black and white, and I had my hand in it. Kind of resting my face, my hand. And everyone was like, "No, you cannot have a hand in a headshot." It was like one of those rules. Cut to this iconic shot of Angus in Braveheart, where he's sitting there with this hand on his face. Anyway, you'll see it. Check the socials when this episode comes out, everybody.
So Paget claims the car was stolen, but Lassiter and Juliet question why he never reported it stolen then. He claims it must have slipped his mind. That's when Sean and Gus show up at the garage where Max had previously worked on cars, and we meet none other than Gina, a.k.a. Vanessa Lachey, and the ultra-cool Tommy, one of the street racers played by Adam Rodriguez. Sean and Gus ask when the next race is, and Tommy doesn't let on, saying that Sean and Gus wouldn't know the location because they weren't invited. So Sean snoops around on someone's phone, noticing pictures of birds and Lincoln's head. Yes.
In this scene, there's a rather important show first. So everybody pull over, slow down the treadmill, stop your grocery shopping, whatever you're doing. Anyway, take a break, because the show first, it's the very first time we get introduced to Gus as MC Clap Your Hands.
Yep. I knew you were going to get it. MC Clap Your Hands. The best. Like, I think that's his up there.
It's his face when he claps his hands is so good. So, another psychery separation. The car that Adam Rodriguez drives in is, I believe, it's a 67 Chevelle, which the reason is a psychery separation. It's, any fan of Supernatural knows it as Baby. It's the iconic vehicle that the boys drive in Supernatural.
So I didn't know that.
I was like,
that's cool. Oh, yeah. That's very cool trivia.
It's a pretty dope, if you're talking cool vehicles, a 67 Chevelle's, you can't really get much cooler. Other than maybe my 63 Ford Falcon convertible.
So Sean snoops around on someone's phone, noticing pictures of birds and Lincoln's head. Then he puts two and two together after looking at a map and realizing the next race is between Cardinal Road and Siegel Avenue. So Sean and Gus arrive at the secret location that evening, borrowing Henry's truck and adding some nitrous to it for extra speed. Sean and Gus end up raising Tommy for Pink's hot dog since Gus has a coupon. He has a coupon. Sorry, I thought that was funny. Tommy's impressed with Sean and Gus's guts, and the two end up being accepted into their close-knit group and invited to a party. The next day, Henry hops in this car, speeding back uncontrollably as he pulls out of the driveway. In the interrogation room, Juliet and Lassiter question Paget, again revealing his secret theft plan. Then he confesses. Meanwhile, Sean comes up with Road Rash and Torch as nicknames for their car racing identities, but Gus fights back, ultimately landing on G-Force. As the party starts to die down, it's just Tommy's crew and Sean and Gus having a heart-to-heart about Tommy fulfilling his speed dream. Then Max comes up in conversation. We learn that Gina used to be his girlfriend and their relationship didn't end pleasantly. That's when Gina invites Sean outside to talk, checking for a wire and then pulling a gun on him, asking who he is. Luckily, Gus pops out to save him and the SBPD arrives, arresting Gina. Lassiter and Juliet act on their own investigation and end up arresting Gina, who they believe not only committed the
murder.
Thank you.
I get a little extra low on that one.
To the head of the car theft ring. Yeah, you got a little, that had a nice little crinkle to it.
Lassiter and her are finally back working together properly.
I was like, oh, this is good. We're like a team again. We're not like at each other. Like, we've been very bitey with each other. It's very nice to see us back as detectives partners. When they get back to SBPD, ballistics shows that Gina's gun was used to kill Max. But Sean determines that it could not have been her, since that was the shooter, because she had previously lost the ability to use two of her fingers. And of course, he had to sing Danger Music to solve it. Unfortunately, this forces Sean to face the fact that the murderer. All right, you're gonna let me have that one?
You get another shot at that one.
I can have that one? Okay. Oh no, yeah. I kind of liked my little like murderer. Okay.
Ooh, he's very sort of British. I like it.
Murderer. Anyway, and leader of the car theft ring is Tommy, the cool guy that Sean has bonded with. Sean figures out that Tommy had murdered the thief in the beginning because he was trying to go independent and start his own car theft ring, and Max was just getting in the way. At the same moment,
have
Tommy
we mentioned
and the gang
that Tommy's played by the very stupid, handsome Adam Rodriguez?
Oh, we've mentioned his name, but we haven't talked about how great he is. Yeah. He's so good in this episode. I think he's so good.
Stupidly handsome Adam Rodriguez, who for a while was with my old acting. We used to have the same acting teacher for a while.
Oh, really?
In Los Angeles. Yeah, I believe so. And there's,
I didn't know that at all.
When
he's,
we see Karen in the SPPD.
He's so lovely. And just,
no, we had a great time with Adam. He was
such a good time.
Great guy.
Yeah.
I believe we have another show first here when we're back at the SPPD. O'Hara is rocking a popped dick.
Oh, am I? Do I have a high collar? An open collar?
Yeah, you've got the whole pop. You've got the whole thing going on.
Now I want to go back and see it. I got to see this. Okay. Oh, no, we're at the psych office now. At the same moment, Tommy and the gang arrive at the psych office informing Sean that he is the one that is going to retrieve the sports car Max was driving out of the police impound. He tells Sean that if he sees any cops coming, Gus is going to die. This was crazy. We put Gus on the line. Tommy plans on using the car to get away and finally seek the ultimate thrill, hitting a speed of 200 miles per hour. Just as Tommy is speeding away in his new car, it is revealed that Sean was clever enough to plan ahead by placing a zucchini in Tommy's tailpipe. As the police chase after him, and Dan Shea, I want to hear about all this. And as Tommy tries to speed up, the car gives out. Sean's vegetables in the tailpipe trick worked. Tommy is arrested for the murder of Max and for leading the car ring, and Gina is acquitted. Lassiter tells Sean he did something illegal by stealing the car to save Gus and then asks, what does Gus even offer to the team anyway? So mean. So mean. Juliet is totally, I'm mad. What?
The coolest shot ever of Lassiter O'Hara at the end of this, of the runway where he's, Tommy's rushing at us in the Lamborghini, the shot of Lassiter O'Hara with guns drawn ready to take this son of a bitch down because he's a murderer. And that could happen. So it's like, I just loved it because it really made my little heart warm again to see Lassiter and Hera really, really back working together again, being badass cops. Because it's been a while since the trauma of Yin.
Yeah.
The clock tower trauma.
No, we're back. We're back now. Everybody's back. Yeah, the clock tower trauma. So Lassiter says, what does Gus even offer the team anyways? Easy. One, the blueberry. Two, the super sniffer. Three, a positive work attitude. Then Sean takes the car once more for a joyride. And that is our Sean and Gus in drag racing. And Dan Shea, I know you have, you're a busy man. We have some fan questions. Do you have time to do some fan questions with us?
I certainly do.
Yay. Okay, good. Yeah. I mean, I have some too, just because the car stuff in this episode, I mean, I like stunt-wise is crazy, but also how we shot it. Like, I mean, Mel Damsky always with the action, he's so good. But some of these shots when like the cars are, I thought it was incredible. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. We also had the ultimate arm too, the camera moving along with people. You generally pull the cars coming at you and then you chase behind them and then you have raking shots beside. If you have two cars like this, you eliminate that car, then that's where you put in the camera car and it zooms along with it. And it's like the Flintstones when you see the lamp and then the TV and then the chair, you get that speed as you're going along. So then when you cut all that stuff together,
it really
looks cool. And it was a pretty cool sequence. We had the best drivers in town. We had wet downs and we're sliding around corners. And was that the one too where we had the girl in the beginning doing the flag thing when the two cars went? That was kind of neat too. I think Mel picked that girl. He had special people he liked to do, you know, different stunts for. So it was pretty cool. It was over in North Van. It was night. It was a pretty cool sequence.
That's so neat. It's like people, I think sometimes when we watch movies, like they don't get it. I think about like, I mean, this obviously was like our kind of Fast and Furious episode, but just the amount of like, I mean, for like danger, but it's like precision to be able to like film and be a car's going that fast at that speed. And I mean, it just, the skill you all have and like the care you all have around doing some of the most dangerous things is really the real
skill comes with the ultimate arm drivers, because the stunt guys are going fast and they're hitting their marks and they're sliding the cars, but the ultimate arm guy has this arm sticking out on the side of the vehicle and it's going up and down, and it's raking the sides of the cars, and it's going up, it's going down to the tires. That person has a way tougher job of driving than the actual stunt people sometimes, because
the genius of Marco Ciccone and our entire camera department, yeah. Focus Pullers.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marco, he's unbelievable. Yeah. But, and also Mel, I think we had Gaston, I think this may have been a different sequence. Again, sorry, going off topic all the time, but Gaston had the thing called the Black Rhino, which he would use for car chases also. Then Mel would not sit in that thing. Like, he was supposed to drive behind the cars racing. And Mel said, screw that, I'm not going to go in that car. So then I had to go in it. And then he had to trust my judgment, which is, you know, probably the reason the show got canceled, because, you know, that's like your first and last mistake right there. But it was fun.
You know, it's also funny too, because the thing is, like, what you all do makeup wise, hair wise, body wise as well, like, you know, it has to be believable that it is the actor, you know, doing these things. So much so that, you know, as I was, as people know, you know, James and I were obviously together when we were doing the show. And there was one day that we were on set. It was during Death is in the Air. It was like our weird outbreak episode, which is now weirdly like COVID. And there was one day we were standing in the parking lot somewhere, and Byron, it was the back of Byron. I was just sort of looking off, and I didn't even like put two and two together. I wasn't even looking that closely, but still his build was so similar that I went up and I put my arms around him. Like, it was James. And he was like, I was just letting it happen. I wasn't going to say anything. And I was, it was a very funny. We still talk.
Byron was a clone for James Rodriguez. Yeah. He saved our ass so many times, you know, by almost being able to shoot him straight on with his face. He was such a good.
It was really good. Incredible. Yeah.
He's such a really good stunt person, too.
Yeah, he's so good. He's just up for anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Cat food has been the same forever. It's time for cat food to move into the 21st century. That's why you have got to try Smalls. It is 2023. Are you still feeding your cat kibble? Now is the time to update your cat food with Smalls. Smalls cat food is protein-packed recipes made with preservative-free ingredients you'd find in your fridge, and it's delivered right to your door. Smalls started back in 2017 by a couple of guys home cooking cat food in small batches for their friends. Today, Smalls has served millions of meals to cats all across America. At this point, you might be wondering, why can't I just feed my cat kibble? Believe it or not, your cute kitty descended from ferocious desert cats who hunted live prey for food, and your cat isn't any different. They still need fresh, protein-packed meals to be at their best. It makes sense. Other cat food brands know this, but they choose to put their wallets first. They fill their food with mysterious meat byproducts, artificial flavoring, and preservatives with names I don't even want to try to pronounce. That sounds gross. Imagine having to eat it every day. After making the switch to Smalls, 78% of cat owners reported their cats had shinier and softer fur, and 90% reported overall health improvements. That is a big deal. The cats that I foster have never been happier. The team at Smalls is so confident your cat will love their product that you can even try it risk-free. That means they will refund you if your cat won't eat their food. I can finally open a packet of cat food and not get nauseous. And I recognize the ingredients in a packet of Smalls food. And the best part, the foster cats have way better breath. That's nice, right? There's nothing worse than a kitty with stinky breath. Anyway, remember, high quality ingredients mean a healthier and happier life for your kitty. So head to smalls.com/pineapple and use code pineapple at checkout for 50% off your first order plus free shipping. That's the best offer you are going to find, but you have to use the code pineapple for 50% off your first order. One last time, that's promo code pineapple for 50% off your first order plus free shipping. Do it. Do you struggle with the perfect smoky eye? Don't even get me started. Whenever I try to do one for a nice night out, I always look like a raccoon, or that I just rub my eyes with my makeup still on. It's really something I've tried for a very long time. I can't really get there. Luckily, I use the Infinity Waterproof Eyeliner from Thrive Cosmetics. This eyeliner is waterproof and smudge-proof for all-day wear, and I recently discovered it even holds up in a swimming pool. It was really nice.
You know, you can kind of never wear makeup in a swimming pool because it's going to run and it's going to blah, blah. Anyway, not this. It stayed. It has the right amount of intense, high-impact pigmentation in one smooth swipe. Plus, it has a built-in sharpener for creating ultra-fine lines and an angled smudge tip for smooth, effortless blending. The Infinity Waterproof Eyeliner has bold and classic neutral shades that complement every eye color and skin tone and has more than 5,000 five-star reviews for a reason. Thrive Cosmetics is certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free beauty products made with clean, skin-loving ingredients. No parabens, sulfates, phthalates, all without compromising performance. And Cause is in the name for a reason. As part of their mission, every purchase supports organizations that help communities thrive, such as those battling domestic abuse, homelessness, cancer, and more. Say goodbye to smudgy, embarrassing, smoky eyes, and hello to easy and beautiful, effortless makeup, all thanks to Thrive Cosmetics and Infinity Waterproof Eyeliner. I love this eyeliner. I love this cosmetic brand. I really, really do. And other people do too. I know I had my makeup done for recently for the Vanity Fair party. And I noticed that even Anton, I love you so much, he has started using it as well. Like he was pulling out some of the makeup and I was like, I'm so happy that you're using Thrive as well. So even that makeup was done with Thrive. Big fan, just a big fan. The Cause, everything. You have to try Thrive Cosmetics to see for yourself. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order when you visit thrivecosmetics.com/pineapple. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/pineapple for 20% off your first order. Okay, some fan questions, and then I think I have maybe a couple that are going to be my own for Dan. Okay, how often does Lassie hum danger music when solving crimes? Tim,
you asking me that?
No, this is for Tim.
No, he only hums it to himself during the driving scenes.
Only the driving he scenes. Yes, he, just the driving.
Only the chase scenes.
Yeah.
Which we didn't have too many Lassiter chase scenes.
No, we had a few, right? Maybe. But
I'm surprised this was the only time we got to ever hear Lassie's personal danger music.
Yeah.
Think if he was running when he was running with his weapon into danger, he would have been
singing his music. Yeah, I know. Why didn't we hear it more? I want to hear it more. I feel like that needs to be a part of the podcast
because it was internal.
It was internal. I get that.
He was singing.
A professional.
His internal monologue.
Right.
That's what it was. That's my answer.
Okay.
Did you guys ever talk about Billy Zane, that car chase? Because that was pretty cool too. Mm. When we were driving around in circles in a parking lot, it was, remember Billy Zane was a co-star in the last season?
No, we haven't gotten to Billy's episode. That was much later.
We have.
Not to Billy's.
But what happened? Can I talk about that? I wasn't there.
Well, that's in the future, so I shouldn't talk about it?
No, you can talk about it. Wait, what I mean, you could say, what happened? I don't think it was there.
It was kind of cool because it was a chase scene and we had designed it with these little dinky toys. So I went into a room with the grown-ups, Steve Franks and those guys, and I was trying to pitch the car chase with the little dinky toys and in their huge Winnebago with their satellite dish and the whirlpool and jacuzzi. And so they signed off on it. And then we had to shoot it. And so, but then they let me stupidly direct second unit. Because I had sort of created this little chase scene. And then, but we had to do a thing where Billy Zane was pretending to drive. He was on the camera truck. And then I had to take him through it. Like I'd say, okay, the blueberry's turning left now. So you gotta turn your wheel to the left. And then now they're going around the corner. So you gotta be doing this. You gotta angle your body a certain way. But the thing is, I couldn't see from our vantage point where we were in the scene to explain to him what it was that he was supposed to do. And so Damski was getting so mad at me, like, you got to tell the actor what to do because they don't know the chase scene. You know it and they don't. So I had to stick my head out and look back at Billy Zane driving but look at the monitor to see where we were in the actual scene to yell to him, okay, now you turn right, now you turn left. Because of the, on the first take, he got a bit annoyed because he's like, how am I supposed to react? I'm just sitting here like this. Which way do I turn? And so finally we got it sorted out with me kind of hanging out the window, looking at Billy Zane's car. And then, but also looking at our monitor in our camera car to see where it related to how they were in the sequence. So that was my introduction to to Billy Zane, he thought and he realized right away that I was an idiot. We went on from there. So, but it did actually work out.
If we had a drinking game for every time Dan Shea said something about himself, like, I'm the idiot, I'm the goofball, I'm the whatever, people would be...
Or the time you guys have said it about me. That'd be a better drinking game.
Never.
Never, Dan.
Never, ever. Only love. We love you.
We put our lives in your hands.
I know you do.
All right. Who in the cast and crew would win in a drag race? I mean, Tim?
It depends on what I'm driving.
Probably.
I would say Tim, if you're asking me.
I'm asking
you.
Like
I said, he scared the crap out of me with his driving. Like it, seriously. Like, I'm not sure which was scarier, you hanging from that chair,
oh 50
stories up, or him driving through the stage with, with cast and crew, pushing carts, and he's driving his Lassie-mobile through everybody, and then stomping on the stomp brake, and you know, coming to a stop with smoke coming out of the wheels.
Oh, wait, which
that stomp brake was fun.
I'd say Tim.
Okay. I would like to publicly apologize to both of you, our cast and crew, and my wife for scaring the living shit out of them with my driving.
Accepted.
All right. I love it. Yeah, accepted. Okay. What are your dream cars? I obnoxiously love a big truck. It doesn't make a ton of sense, but... I love a big truck. Tim, what's your dream car? I feel like you have.
I have mine. It's my 63 Falcon that I have. That was always my dream car. For some reason, I had this car on the brain my entire life. I'll put a picture on the socials for it. It's this really bitchin'. It's this super cool 63. It's a 60s convertible. So I was looking for it for years, and sprints are really hard to find because they're the higher level of the Falcon. Kind of like a Chevy SS is the higher level of Chevys, for those of you who know what I'm talking about. So I've tracked one down. I joined the Falcon. This is a long story. I joined the Falcon Club of America just so I could get their news, their magazine, because they had ads in there. So finally one day I see this car for sale. I'm like, oh, that's it. And I call the guy, but I think Lily had just been born and we needed to put a deck on the house. So I was like, this is a really bad financial move right now. I didn't pull the trigger on it. And one day I had a post office box at the time, drive down the post office box, pull out the newsletter, and that's this Falcon is still for sale. As I'm leaving the post office, my agent calls. I was doing another show at the time. I was doing Joe Jingamy at the time. And he says, hey, they're making a new series regular on Joe Jingamy. So suddenly my financial world changed. I literally got in the car, called this guy about the car, and said, I want the car. Cut to like a week later, I'm on a plane flying to Sacramento to meet this guy to get the car. I used to be able to work on cars. My dad was a big gearhead. My brother's a huge gearhead. So I knew a little bit about how to work on a car, but I was like, I don't really know what I'm about buying a car. Basically said, if I'm getting this thing and it turns over, I'm buying it. So we get in this thing and he takes me for a ride and it was in such incredible shape. So I buy this car from the guy, drive it back down to LA 9 hours later in the convertible but I said to myself, I'm going to drive this car every day to work to the Fox lot. And sure enough, like one of my greatest joys in the world, I mean, because of stroke, I don't drive anymore. But one of my greatest joys in the world was always driving this car on a lot, on a movie lot. Because there's the phrase of like movie star parking. Actually, the phrase should be TV star parking, because TV people get better parking than movie stars. Just because because in TV, like your parking space would be right next to the studio, so you can really like show off your car.
Right.
That was true. Maggie.
I love that.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Favorite car? Not so much cars with me. Motorcycle. I used to have this 1967 Honda Hellcat 450 with chrome side panels and chrome everything. And I remember I thought this is my first time to go out on a date, so I had to wait till I could afford the second helmet. Before I could go on a date, because the girl behind me, whoever the lucky gal was going to be, needed a helmet. So the problem with the bike was it didn't have a kickstart. So in order for it to start, you had to run alongside it and jump on it and then pop the clutch.
Oh,
and that's
stop
how it can start.
Stop
so,
it.
So I picked her up. I went to her house and I put my nice, cool helmet on and I gave her the helmet. And she was about to get on the bike. And I said, no, you gotta wait a minute till I do this thing. So I ran and fired it up And then pop, 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 it started running. And then I curled around to pick her up, but I was going too fast. So then she couldn't get on. So when I came back and I stopped, so let's try it a different way. So she got on, and then she's on the bike, and then I'm running alongside her to pop the clutch. So she's sitting there holding on for dear life. So I'm running. I then jump on the bike, but I bring my leg over top, and I wind up kicking her in the head because I had to get my leg up over top of her to get on it. So it kicked her helmet forward, so she couldn't see anymore because the helmet was down here. And then I got up, and then I popped the clutch, and she flew back like this and had to hold on to me because the force of the popping of the clutch brought her back.
Oh my God, and, this is crazy!
And there was a match made in heaven. It was just true love from then on.
Oh my God!
So I got to ask though, Dan, was there a second date?
No, but still, in my mind, we grew together. Like who could say? Like what's the long, like one good date can be just as good as like 20 years of marriage. If in your mind it was special, it's just
God.
All about little moments. Who's to say that a long moment is not as good as my short moment?
Oh my
Who's
God.
The judge?
Oh my God. You all, this is okay. So okay. How did you join the psych crew and what is your most favorite stunt you've ever performed?
How did I join psych?
Yeah. How did you hired? Like, was it what was the vetting process? Did you meet with Steve? Do you remember how?
Who was it though? It wouldn't have been Steve. Who was the guy dumb enough to hire me? Oh no, it was Tracy Jeffries.
I love Tracy.
Tracy right.
Jeffries. Yeah,
Tracy.
It was. In fact, we were just finishing Stargate SG-1, and we were on a tech survey. We had like 10 years of Stargate SG-1, and I thought, what the hell am I going to do? Who's going to hire me to work? And Jeff Plakas was the grip.
Oh yeah, Jeff.
And he said he knew of this show. Tracy Jeffries was doing this show. And so right away, we didn't have text messages then. I think I phoned her. And I think it was literally the fact that I was the first one to ask her that I got the show. That was it. The fact that I was just the first, literally, I wish it was more cool that my reel was so fantastic that they had to have me. And I had done all these huge features, huge $100 million features in Bora Bora and Tahiti. But the fact of the matter was, it was our last tech survey for Stargate SG-1. And I heard about Tracy, who lives in Kits. She just lives down the hill from me.
Yeah.
And she actually did a short movie on stand-up comics for her student film when she was in film school. And she came down to Punchline's Comedy Club. And all of us, we were comics back then. And she wound up doing a special on a couple of us comics. And that's how I knew her. She was like, oh, you're that funny guy. Yeah, sure, you can do it. And so all of your lives were in the hands of some second-rate stand-up comic from 15 years ago.
Oh, terrifying. My God. I had no idea, and I love that. I love that story.
No, you don't. It just scares you to the core.
No, it just shows how talented you are and how, like, like you've just had, like, so much life that you have, and you're so talented in different ways. Like,
It shows you that I have no talent, but I can do little bits and things all over the place.
I don't know why and I try paying you a compliment.
I know, but I mean, come on, let's be honest. We hung you from the edge of a thing, right. 15 feet up. We had a little pad like 10 stories down. We almost blew
let's
you guys
be honest.
Up.
It was a mattress. It wasn't even a pad. It was a mattress.
It was a mattress. And by the way, now that you're saying
it was like a mattress.
You know what?
You're right.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah. Yeah. We're going to get you back, Dan.
I know.
But speaking of, and this is the last question. What is your most favorite stunt you've ever performed?
The one I did.
Or one that stands out. Yeah.
My boy, Richard Dean Anderson, I was doubling him after MacGyver in Toronto on a movie. And the gag was that he was supposed to pick up this bag of money and then something was going to wrap around his ankle and pull him into these huge rollers that was in a factory. The close shot of Richard Dean doing the grimacing and so on and so forth. And then they wrapped the thing around my leg and it went right through these huge rollers. But there was a little thing that I could slip out of it if I wanted to. If it got too close to the rollers, I could pull my leg up. The safety thing kept sliding out and falling on the ground. So the director said, would you mind doing it without the safe? Can we really attach your leg and really start pulling you towards these huge rollers? And then we'll cut before you get there. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, no problem. And so they actually attached this thing around my leg and they were pulling me towards these huge industrial rollers. Oh, and as my foot got close to these huge rollers, I'm waiting for cut, but I didn't hear cut. And all of a sudden, my boot started to go in these huge rollers, and I'm like, you know, the whole stunt thing, yeah, kind of cool, but that kind of hurts because it's an industrial roller and my foot's going in it. And I just think to my mom and dad thinking, you guys should get a university education so you don't lose a limb in a factory accident like your Uncle Jerry did. So here I was, university educated on a huge movie, about to lose a foot.
Oh my God.
And so the thing kind of rolled on my foot, and I'm kind of screaming, but heroically, and then it spit me out. And then they rushed me to the hospital. And I remember it was back east in Toronto in the wintertime. It was freezing cold. So I took the boot off and put my foot outside so it was throbbing. I wanted the minus temperature to cool my foot down. And then it turns out that the guy who was on it was an actual factory guy, and he wasn't a special effects guy. And he instead of pressing stop, he pressed reverse. But it took like a quarter of a turn before reverse spit me out, and by that time my foot was already in the thing. So the good news was that like in Reservoir Dogs, I finally had a stunt story. Like in Reservoir Dogs, you had to have a gangster story to be cool. So now I finally had my first stunt story. I broke my foot on a movie back in Toronto, doubling Richard Dean Anderson. The second little bit of good news was I got to go on an indemnity, because when I came back to Vancouver, there wasn't going to be any work for me anyways. So now I got to walk around on crutches in front of the other stunt guys and be cool. That's not cool for you actors, but for us stunt guys, that's supposed to be cool. Yeah. And plus I got paid 75% of my wage for 3 months because I was hurt. And so then 8 months later, they're shooting the Call of the Wild, but this time starring Ricky Schroeder. And my foot had long since healed, and I got called out to have a part on the Ricky Schroeder Call of the Wild movie. And it was the same director who apparently threw up when he saw my foot go into the rollers, and me screaming, actually threw up during the shooting of that MacGyver movie. Not MacGyver, it was Richard Dean Anderson, MOW. And so now I'm auditioning for him 8 months later in Vancouver for the Call of the Wild, the Ricky Schroeder movie. And I walked into the audition for him, and I immediately started limping, like my foot, like I had a gimp, like forever. I was disfigured forever. And he said, shut up, you got the part, get out of here.
Oh my God, hilarious.
Got the part.
So yeah, it had a lot of...
Amazing.
Oh my God, got the Dan, part. Thank you for sharing all of your stories. Thank you for... I don't know what to say other than I'm very mad at that director. I'm very mad at that situation. As you were talking, I'm like, how could that be allowed? How could it even get so close that like you couldn't be...
No, what you were thinking was... That's the same way you felt when I was a coordinator. So actually, it's good.
Here we go again. Here we go again. Anyway, Dan, thank you so much for coming. Thank you for sharing all of your stories. Thank you for being, you know, our guide and our safety. I know you're going to be like, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, for all of those years and taking care of us.
Thank you for not telling Maggie how terrified you were of the clock tower stunt before she shot it.
Oh my God, I'm so glad I didn't know that. Can I tell you, that is brand new information for me that I don't know what I would have done. I mean, that was such an intense night. Like I think about it still and my legs immediately just go into the shakes. I can't, like it's my, everything drops. It's awful. And oh my God, you're good. Because
we do that to actors every day, so don't worry about it. Like it's just the common occurrence for us.
Oh my God, I'm sure. Like that's the thing that's so crazy is like I'm talking about it. Like for me, like this was one of the scariest moments of my life, and you guys do this every day. It's really, really something.
Except you guys are on camera dangling. I'm just watching by the monitor.
That's not true.
It was such a shame. Maggie was so talented. It was just we loved her so much. And if only she were here today to, you know, to say how much she loved us. But unfortunately.
It's good. The joke. It just keeps on giving.
Oh, boy.
All right. We love you so much. And you're right there. See, you're ready to go. And now I'm really sorry, but you might have to actually just focus on that meeting.
Such a pleasure to speak with Dan again and finally have him on the pod. We love him so much. As always, don't forget to follow us on our Instagram at @thepsychologistrn and our Twitter at @psychologistpod. Plus, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/psychologistrn for full video episodes of the pod. You guys, Motor City Comic Con is this weekend. If you haven't already, go to motorcitycomiccon.com and get those very few tickets that are left to help us podcast the shit out of it live Saturday night. We couldn't be more excited to see you all.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.